Hello and welcome to the Home Uplink podcast. Today is Friday.
Friday.
End of the week.
Beat you.
Oh, you beat me to it. But as we say every time, every day's work. Everybody loves it. You know, if you work in real estate, you're still going to be working tomorrow. Have fun. But yeah, welcome back. Thanks for tuning in again, right? I'm glad you enjoy us speaking into the microphone.
Yeah, we enjoy speaking into the microphone, and yeah. I'm glad that your ears
enjoy
don't mind our voices.
Yeah, it's not, they're not bad.
Speaking into your ears.
So today, I mean, you know, we've talked enough the past few days about everything. You know, we'll let it simmer down.
We're done with that.
Today, what we're going to be talking about, though, is there's an article written by a magazine.
Big brand magazine. Big brand magazine.
And it was... What it is it says the 5 steps to make your best offer in an exploding housing market, right? And it's written with a real estate professional in mind, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, trying to explain to somebody what the best
they interviewed somebody.
Are. Yeah. And so they're trying to give their, yeah, the best tips. So what we're going to do is we're going to look over it. We're going to read through it, and we're going to give you our...
We're going to nitpick.
Yeah, we're gonna go ahead and pull everything out of it. You know what I mean?
There's going to be layers.
Yeah, we're going to...
It's like an onion. Yeah, we're just going to keep, you know, shedding them layers.
Yeah. So let's see. So number one, so it says, number one, constantly check real estate websites for the newest listings, then make a solid offer immediately. You need to catch the house as soon as it hits the market. Have your lending documents to make the offer pronto. This leads to the next point on how to choose a lender.
Okay. A few issues with that already.
What do you mean?
Okay. All right. Let's nitpick that already. Uh-huh. Number one.
It's
do
wrong.
You have all day, every day to sit there on your computer and constantly be updating Realtor, Zillow, or Redfin?
Yes.
You do. Okay. Well, since we're brokers, that's what we do all day anyway.
Yes.
But let's say if you're a normal individual who has a 9-to-5 schedule, kids, a wife, and let's say a dog. And you got soccer practice and karate and school starting, so you have to go to your teacher orientations. You're not going to be able to sit there and comb through the millions and millions of listings that just randomly pop up, are you? Are you gonna have a map on your computer and just update it every 15 minutes to make sure that there's something that pops up, you're on top of it?
You know who can do that, though.
Wait.
You know whose job it is to do that?
Us?
Oh my gosh. So, yeah.
Number one, instead of you doing it, what you could do is you could rely on a, like we've done podcasts in the before, you're not paying us anything until the deal closes, and you don't even pay us anything after the deal closes. So why would you not, number one, reach out to a real estate professional and have them set up a search parameter for your square footage?
The area
price,
you like?
The area, the beds and baths, the waterfront or no waterfront.
Pool,
and then
no
whenever
pool,
those properties
garage.
Come up on our end, which is before everywhere else.
Yeah, by 1 to 2 days, mind you. Because the relapse time is 1 to 2 days. You have to realize this.
They don't necessarily update immediately when they go in the system. Sometimes they do. I'm not going to say, you know, they don't, but sometimes it does take a nice 24-hour turnaround for the outside third parties to get the data. So for you to be able to search on your own, you're already one step behind because I have already found that property for a client.
Yeah. And chances are if you see it on one of the other sites,
the big box sites,
you're going to find out that that's probably, if you're like, oh, it says it's on the market still, it's purchasable, right? But it checks off every one of your boxes, it checks off somebody else's boxes too.
If it's a great deal, it's a great deal for everybody.
So, you know, you're going to have to sit there and realize that there are people out there who, if you're not working with, you know, don't put this as a, you always got to work with a realtor, blah, blah, blah. But
no,
for this,
I'm going to be honest. Uh-huh. If you're not, you're already a step behind.
Yeah, you're behind. That's what I'm going to say. Oh, okay. Step one is you're already behind, because if you don't want to, that's your choice. It's your prerogative, right?
Correct.
And it's like, yeah, okay, that's your option to do that. But in a real estate market that's fast paced, and you don't have the option, right? If you're saying, I want a, you know, it's fine if you're going to go live out in the suburbs, right? Out in the middle of nowhere, and properties sell in 2 months. You don't have to worry about it. It's not a worry, right? But if you're living in a city, and you know, you have 4 zip codes where a property goes up for sale and it's sold instantly, right?
Yeah.
Like back in Vegas, there's places that instantly sell. They go on the market, 5 hours later, you have 5 offers.
I'm going to be honest, guys. I put a couple properties on, you know, the MLS from Florida, and I was doing deals in Vegas. And before, let's just say, before I left my house, I put the property in the MLS, press enter. Before I was going out for lunch. Before I actually got out of the community, I already had 3 phone calls from 3 separate agents asking me, first off, when can they get in the property? And second, if they're taking offers already. And that was 5 minutes. So if you, as an individual, think that, you know, just because you surf the web enough that you find these gems or these criteria that match, chances are you're already behind the eight ball.
Yeah, there's probably somebody, because you have to realize a realtor's entire job is to find those, right? A real estate agent, a real estate professional's entire job is to find the deals that you're also looking for, right?
So we're gonna completely X out one, and we're gonna say this. In order to be a competitor in this market, you need to reach out to a real estate professional and have them set up a search parameter for all new listings.
Yeah. If you're in a cutthroat market,
very
you
easy
have
to do.
There's nothing you, there's no, this isn't, you know, if you've listened to any of the previous 40 podcasts we've done so far, you'll realize we're not sitting here. We're not the type of people that are going to tell you, go out and get a realtor, or go out and get a real estate professional, or go out and get a real estate agent the second you want to start looking at properties or something like that. Right.
Well, you need to get your due diligence involved and get
what we're saying is, when you're ready to buy, right, you've taken the steps and you're like, I'm ready to buy a property now, right? And now you need to find one. You're going to need help.
Yeah.
In this market, you're going to need help.
Yep.
There's no ways to cut it. Like, you can look all you want up until the point that you actually want to buy, and you're going to need help.
And let's go out on a limb and say, maybe, you know, we've been noticing the real estate market here has been trending down.
Yeah, slowing for sure.
It's been slowing for sure. More properties have been sitting on the market for longer periods of time, which inevitably is good for the individual who is doing their own searches at home, because then they might actually be able to get in front of the freight train versus try and jump on the back of it. So yes, in the near future, I mean, as of when I'm looking today, right this second, there are already 322 new listings, and it's only 12 o'clock in the afternoon here, with 141 price decreases and 88 back on the market. So we're already talking about 400 to 550 different properties that are now circulating new in the market today. And I mean, that's a lot.
I mean, that's a lot of problems. I mean, the thing is, what's more interesting about it is when you sit there and you look at it, you're going to find a lot of the time that when somebody goes and looks at how many properties are increasing or decreasing, you know, a statistician's going to go, oh, well, we see a percentage increase in properties per month, and we see this and we see that and we see, that doesn't really change anything because it's only a 1% increase in it's this, that. It's like, no, what's an interesting thing is, if there's 150 houses that get sold in a day and there's 400 houses that get put back, you know, newly on the market, that's a huge change in today's market. That's completely not even the same as to what we've been seeing, which is like, you know, 270 houses sold, 180 put on the market. You know what I mean? It's like the now there's an actual gain in property amounts. So, well, you know, just to glance over it, you're going to be behind in a cutthroat market. You know, if you're sitting there and you're in Vegas or LA or, you know, Denver, Colorado, Portland, Oregon, you know, one of those hot, hot markets, New Jersey, apparently, you know, you're going to have to work with somebody because you're going to, if not, you're going to be behind. And even just the difference of a few hours, you know, makes quite the difference. And so two, the second thing they say is use smaller regional lenders for financing versus national ones. Local lenders are hungrier for new business and will likely go out of their way to expedite loans, whereas national lenders are more bureaucratic and typically don't give the same level of customer service as a local lender. As a result, good local lenders can often achieve a closing in as quickly as 21 days with swift movement on title searches and other paperwork. So get your ducks in a row well in advance with items like mortgage pre-qualification and employment history. I'll give him that one.
Yeah. You know what? That's spot on. We've done podcasts in the past about, you know, individuals who have used big box real estate mortgagers and more independent ones, and they seem to have more of a connection with the smaller ones that can give them that personal, you know, touch. So yeah, I'll give him that one.
Yeah, the one's apt. Three is look for properties that have been on the market for a while, 90 days or longer. Unlike the first suggestion here, a lowball offer has a high probability of success. Yes, there may be issues, which is why the home may have languished, but they could also be priced too high relative to the surrounding homes. In these situations, sellers are desperate, and as a result, they are likelier to be open to lower offers simply because they have run out of time. Not in this market. Not in this market. I wish that were the case. Maybe in 2010, if somebody had their property on for 6 months, you might be able to go in there.
I want to reiterate, if a property is sitting on the market for more than 90 days...
There's a real problem.
There's a real problem right now. And the real problem probably consists of something structural, which has then, you know, a large implication of funds after the purchase. So that's probably why. And yes, if you were able to establish that this property needs a whole new foundation or a whole new roof, yeah, of course you could, come in with a really lowball offer. But, you know, it's a different breed in this market. I mean, and I'd like to think a lot more people are not willing to take the low offer currently because...
Yeah, no, they're not. It's really not. The problem is if you're writing this from the expectation that you're in an exploding real estate market, you have to realize, I don't know if you've, to anybody listening, have you ever been on Craigslist and you looked at a used car and you have somebody who's like, I know what I got, no tire kickers, don't come, you know, it's like a 1960, you know, piece of junk truck. And they're like, I know what I got, you know.
Yeah, $4,800 cash. Yeah,
cash, OBO. No, that's people with their homes.
Yeah.
You know, they truly believe, I mean, they're in the asset mindset when it comes to their property, right? And whether it's because they have too much in it, whether they need to make a certain amount of money, they want to make a certain amount of money out of it, even if it's sitting on the market for a long amount of time, currently, right? Like I said, it's not 2010, it's not 9 months on the market, but currently, if something's sitting on there for 2, 3, 4 months,
yeah,
like you said, there's a problem, like a big one, hundreds, you know, $50,000-$100,000 problem, and they're asking, you know, normally within 80% to 100% of asking price, even though there's a, you know, an additional 30-40% of the purchase price needed to make sure the property's livable, right? And that's, you're not going to be able to come in from what, you know, personally, our own experience.
Yeah,
people are not willing to come in and price themselves out because they say, well, no, you know, the guy down the street sold his property for $10,000 more than I'm asking, and I don't think I'm asking that much. And it's like, that's great, but you have a sinking foundation.
It's, it's a very particular circumstance when that actually comes to fruition. Let's just say a lot of time people have these high hopes of, oh, this property has been sitting on the market stale. Mm-hmm. And you know,
I can come in
and, you know, offer them 80 to 100 grand less. Not necessarily today, but you know, maybe in the near future, you know, like would, okay, we're not going to get back into it, but you know, maybe in the near future,
Yeah, you might have a chance.
What's the next one?
But yeah. So it says, be on the lookout for homes that are listed under market. It says, yes, even in today's explosive real estate environment, these properties can be found. But you will need to do a little more analysis. In a tight market, some people will list their houses low. The important thing for a buyer to remember is to put in the best price you can, even if it means going $50,000 to $80,000 above the listed price. As you might expect, the properties in the $500,000+ range, you'll have to put even more to make a higher offer. Again, this is what a buyer needs to incorporate into their home buying calculus during their unusual real estate situation brought on by what appears to be a dramatic paradigm shift in the way business will be done moving forward. That was word salad. I must say, though, that is some of the worst advice I could ever give.
Someone went to Grammarly, and yeah, they decided to reinvent their speech on that one.
I know. Wow.
From 1 to 2 to 3, someone stepped up their game.
They must subscribe to it to get spice up your paragraph with Grammarly.
Oh, my gosh. You want to stand out, right? You want to sound like you're
got the thesaurus.
Yeah, all right. Brontosaurus, take it easy.
I know.
Yeah, no.
No, I don't. When somebody lists their property under value, chances are they're wanting to start a bidding war on their property. And you're going to get caught up, and it's just not going to be good for you.
I've started a conversation with a new client who is interested in selling their property, and they asked for the comps and the numbers. And so I gave them the comps, and then I showed them the ones that are sitting on the market stale, and I showed them the ones that, you know, were in escrow within 3 to 5 days. And the ones that are sitting on the market stale are the ones that are asking 15, 20 to 25,000 above all the last sales. Mm. And the ones that are selling are the ones that are priced 15 to 20 grand below. But when you actually look at how much they sold for, they're selling for 5 to 10 above what the median price is.
Yeah.
So I actually had a conversation with him because he won't, you know, he's asking, should I start out high and see what happens? And I'm like, if you start out high, you're going to scare some people away.
Yeah.
But if you start 5 grand under the median, you could potentially, like Zach said, start a bidding war to where, okay, now I have 3 potential offers. Now I call all these bring, 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 agent 1, 2, 3, give me your best and final because we have a bidding war. And then they call their clients and they say, if you want this place that bad, you know, you're going to have to give their best and final. And then you might, you know, you might get 10 to 15 over the median because someone might come in and say, yeah, you know, we really want to live in this neighborhood, or yeah, we really want, like, love this house. You know, or yeah, you're asking 375, we'll give you 400. And it's like, oh, see, because you're under, you catch a lot more fish than if you're over and just going for that one shark.
Yes, but what we're saying is from this article, and why what you're meaning is this article is based for buyers, right? This is not a good technique for buyers.
No.
Because what happens is you get the same. So for a seller's standpoint, under is amazing.
Yeah.
Because you're going to bring people in. They're going to go, oh, that's under median asking price. I'm going to put in an offer that is asking price, right? Because you're thinking to yourself, it's listed for 375. It's really in the 380s, 390s, right?
Yeah.
If you go, I'm going to list 385, 5K over, you know, what the price is probably going to be, you know, they're thinking, well, I'm asking over value, right? So I should be good, right? I'm asking 10K over what they're asking for,
yeah,
right? But in reality, it's just somebody who's going to come in and offer 20, 30, 40, 50K over ask because they're going, oh, well, that's already below what I was going to pay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, the property down the road is 420.
Yeah, because I was going to pay 450.
Yeah, oh, so okay. I don't really care. I'll go in, yeah, yeah. 415, huh? Yeah. Cash?
Yeah.
It's like, that works, and that's great for a seller because it can drum up a lot of people fighting over a property, which in turn gets you the best offer, right? Because if you have 11 people that all send you their best and final because you're listed 5 below and you go, oh, yeah, you know, I've got 11 offers and 3 of them are cash for 420, right? They're going to do that. They're going to take that offer because they can close in 2 weeks, right? And then they're going to sit there, run through all the inspections, and there's, you know, they're not going to put contingency on appraisal because guess what? They're just paying cash for it. They just want the house, right? So for a seller's standpoint, great. Buyers, though, which is what this is for, you're going to be competing with people who do not care. I mean, that's the problem is you're not going to be getting a deal looking for under market and then going, I'm going to do a best and final and offer 10% more than the asking price.
I have an issue. I mean, I have a connection with my money and you know,
what is it? Are you Scrooge McDuck?
No. Like we have an understanding that if I run out of it, I don't have any more.
Oh yeah.
And you know, in our business, you know, we're entrepreneurs. We started this from scratch. We don't make an everyday, you know. I'm not paid hourly. We do this, and when the deals are done, we make our money. So there's a different budgeting and conception of money in my own mind, which someone else might have a completely different conception because they might be making way more money than me, or they might be, you know, making a salary and they know exactly how much they're making. So there's a different feeling with somebody who's, you know, potentially a buyer who's coming in looking for those lowball offers versus a buyer who doesn't care. They just want the property.
Yeah. And that's the problem when you're looking in an explosive real estate market, like this article's talking about, there's just people who don't care. I mean, you have to realize there's just companies, private equity firms, people, they just have money. They don't really care, right? So if they want the house, they want the house.
Yeah, they're just going to write a check.
So it doesn't really matter. I mean, from that point that they have, look for under market value houses, you're going to be competing with people who are going to come in and just rock the boat. And you're going to be like, well, I put in, you know, I said I'll give you 30K over asking, and then this guy comes in and gives you 80K over asking. It's like you're not going to, you know, whip out another $50,000 for the property, right?
I agree.
And especially if you're looking to get a loan, like the other one states, like you need to have your, employment history and you're going to get a loan. Chances are you're not competing with cash offers when you have a conventional or FHA loan.
Correct.
So that one's not. That one's a no for me, so dog.
He's 2 for 2. Right.
Now the last one, number 5.
Ooh.
Get an appraisal contingency. An appraisal contingency gives you a little leverage after the offer is made in it that allows you to ask for a price reduction that brings the final price closer to an appraised value. Also, having a home inspection will provide you further leverage, so do not avoid it. If a certified inspector discovers serious issues with the state of the home, it will be your advantage in the final negotiation of the price. While I have reduced the list of these powerful 5, your real estate advisor can offer additional strategies, which we are right now.
Yeah. So, number 5 is just I feel like that's just a simple, like he ran out of ideas to give. So he's like, oh, make sure that you get an inspection. Like that's the first thing a real estate agent does is because if you say this offer is contingent upon an inspection and the inspection goes terribly, you get your money back in escrow. But if you don't and you say, hey, I really like this house, but the inspection came back and it's been 15 or 20 days past your due diligence, you lose your escrow deposit.
Yeah.
So, of course, all of our offers that we put in is appraisal.
Contingent on appraisal and inspection.
And inspection. And if you don't, then your real estate agent is dumb because that is exactly what we're paid to do. We're paid to make sure that we have your money in our best interest.
And you're going to have, okay, and to that, as a caveat, you're going to have people who say, well, to make a good offer as even is. Stronger, I'm going to say as is. No inspection, no contingency on appraisal because I'm paying with cash. Like I said, there's people out there that do not care. They don't care.
Yeah.
But that's not you. If you're listening and you're looking to buy a property and you're going to go out and get a loan for it and you're going to do all that, you're not in this situation. You're not listening to us tell you.
No.
Because you're just going out there and you're going, I don't care if it's sinking.
You know, you're watching Bloomberg right now. You're on your yacht.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
you're eating your caviar.
You're not listening.
You just bought a really nice condo complex down in, you know, Miami.
Yeah.
You're not hanging out with us on a Friday. You know, listening to us talk about how this, you know, this advisor, this real estate advisor has now, you know, just spat off the most simplest of information, but yet, Grammarly helped him sound sophisticated.
Hey, it did look good.
So,
if you're going to sit there and say that you're going to want an appraisal contingent, here's a problem. I'll just pick it apart. So when you come in for an offer, right, you're a buyer and you come in with contingencies in a normal situation, right? In a normal real estate market, it's very straightforward. Obviously, you're going to say, yeah, I'm going to put in a contingency for these things, correct, right? Because you want to be protected. You know, if the property, if you get an inspection done and the guy says, yeah, there's black mold everywhere and the roof needs to be replaced, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Or the roof is 25 years old and you can't get it insured.
So you're going to have to put another one on.
You're going to have to literally go spend 30 grand on a new roof so that you can actually insure your property.
Yeah. So, you know, that's something you have to look at. And somebody goes, well, I don't want to buy a property for top dollar and then have to put another 50 grand into it to make it livable. Right. So you put it contingent on inspection. If you don't like how the inspection comes back, you can get your escrow deposit back. Right. That's what they signed it for. An appraisal. Right. And here's the funny thing about this is in a contingency on appraisal means that if you offered, let's say you go to this person and you say, I'm going to offer you $380,000. Right. Now, if they go and they say, hey, actually, this property is worth $392,000, right?
Okay.
Above what they asked, right? The people have to go, okay, well, we're willing to accept under, right? We're willing to accept under $12,000, right? Or they're going to say, well, that's great. You now have to make the difference, right? Of $12,000 buyer. You know, it's 380 grand you're trying to get it for now. We want it for 392.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to make up the difference, right? So that's one end of the contingency problem, right, on an appraisal. The other one is if you go and offer well above asking and you have a loan. Now, here's where it really becomes the issue. They won't loan over the value of a property.
No.
No place will. So in a cash world, it doesn't matter because if you have all the cash in the world, it doesn't matter if it appraises for 20K less, right? The problem is either end of this stick, you're going to be paying more money because what happens is if it appraises low and you still want the property, you're going to have to pay the difference in cash. So if you come in and say, I want it for 380 and the appraiser comes in, it says, actually, it's only 368, right? And your buyer goes, okay, well, I'm not going to take, we both agreed on 380, you know, and I put contingent on appraisal, right? That means you can get out of the deal. That's all that means, right? That means, okay, well, I don't want the property anymore. I just want my escrow deposit back, right? That's what that means. But in reality, if you still want that property, even though it appraised for less, you'll have to make up the difference on either side of the spectrum.
Exactly.
So it's like, That's a good way of protecting yourself. It's like putting a clause in a contract to protect yourself. But at the end of the day, if it doesn't appraise or if it does appraise, you're going to be making up the difference, right? Mm-hmm. If it goes above or below an appraisal value, right? Yep. And that's really what somebody should be educating someone on.
Yes.
It's like, yes, this is a protection for you, but at the end of the day, if you still want the property, you're going to have to make up the difference. And if that's okay with you and you're fine with paying what could be $8,000, $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 difference, right? Because some people also way overvalue their property.
Yes.
Right. And so if you come in and you offer and you don't have any idea, like, you know, for instance, you know, there was a place by us and we knew the owners, they sold the property, they listed it for $560, right? Mm-hmm. And they said, okay, we redid the first floor. The second floor is still the same as it was built in 2001, right? Mm-hmm. Redid the downstairs and redid the backyard, right? Great. It looked nice, but the second floor needed so much work. It was insane. But they said 560, which is absolute top of the market, right? As if they'd redone the entire house.
Correct.
Now, there was still like 1,800 square foot upstairs that was needing to be redone, which is expensive, especially since it's the master and all the bedrooms, right?
Yep.
So they sat there, they listed it for $560,000. The buyers came in and gave them value. They said, okay, we'll give you an offer for 560, ask price, right?
Yep.
Then the appraiser comes in, you know, and he goes, well, it's not 560 because
it's like 545.
Have you done this? Have you done that? It actually appraised for 531.
Oh, okay.
So they wanted the house, right? They still wanted to live there. They wanted the property. Did they have their contingencies in place? Yeah, they did. But it didn't stop them because what happens is the seller goes, well, I still want to sell it for 560. You gave me an offer for 560, right? That's it. End of story. If you don't want to pay 560 for it, I'll find someone who does, right? Yeah. So then they go, okay, well, I do want the property, but you guys appraised low and we're getting a loan on it. But we have to make up the difference.
Yes.
So then they paid the $29,000 out of pocket, right, to them, and then got a loan on it for 531, right? Which, mind you, you still have to pay your closing costs. You still have to pay your down payment.
Everything.
All that on top of that. It's not like, oh, that goes towards my down payment. That goes, no. That's on top. So a normal down payment of 20% plus another basically $30,000 in the appraisal difference. So yes and no. A contingency, yes, is great. That's correct. But it doesn't give you any leverage.
No.
Not at all. Never. It never does. Because if you say to them, well, it appraised high, well, they're going to go, well, that's because the value is higher. So either pay or I'm going to get somebody else. If it appraises low, they're going to go, do you not want the house anymore?
Yeah.
It's like you don't win. It's not a win-win situation. You're not like, oh, I got leverage because there's black mold.
The
it's
greatest like, circumstance no. is if you get an appraisal and appraises for like $5,000 over or $10,000 over.
Yeah, you want very close.
You want to be like right on the mark. You don't want to be like $20,000 under, and you don't want to be $50,000 over because then they might go, what do we do? Are we $50,000 over? Let's just. No, we're walking away, and we're going to put it back on the market. Price increase.
Yeah, exactly.
So I get it.
You always want to, you know, and that's especially prevalent, is you need, if you're selling your home, you always want to have an educated market analysis when you go to list it. You don't want to be like, I'm just going to throw a number against the wall because I feel like that's how much I want.
Works. Does this work? No? Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, let's try this.
It's like, well, on a graph, right, you're up here, your property is listed at 645, and the nearest property to you actually it's only listed for 419. What's the difference between, do you have gold? Do you have a gold foundation? No, I just think it's worth that much. It's like you really want to, when you go to sell your property, and this is from a buyer's perspective, but this is, you know, I'm giving it out to a seller. You really want to have a good idea of what your property's worth because it's not going to help you in the long run if you're priced way over or under, right? Unless someone's paying cash. But like I said, none of this matters if somebody's coming in with, you know, Scrooge McDuck money.
Yeah.
And he's running up with gold bars, you know, you're not in this situation then. So yes, if we're going to sit here and talk about the 1% of people who are going to come in with gold bars to buy your property, then yeah, you're right. But other than that, the other 99% of people who are going to be getting a loan for your property, it makes much more sense to value your property based on what it's actually worth than trying to go way above, you know, because it's only going to, it's just the process is going to be a pain for everyone.
I agree.
So for his fifth point, I'm pretty sure it's getting appraisal contingency, but the reasons as to why you should get one are just because it protects you, not because it's going to give you some form of leverage in the conversation with them, because it doesn't change your stance in the deal at all.
No.
It doesn't matter. You're just going to be sitting there in the same situation, and you're just going to be marked with either I have to pay the difference because it's too low, or I have to pay the difference because it's too high, right?
Yep.
That's it. Yeah. Or you just don't have the property because you've pulled out and got your escrow deposit back. So, you know, it is what it is. But other than that, yeah, I mean, those are his five tips. I'd give him a 2 out of 5?
Yeah.
So not great.
2.5.
Okay, we'll give him a 2.5. So a 50%. Mm-hmm. So we'll give him a 50% on it. Not too bad.
I think next week what we should do is we'll do our own little like segment about, you know,
five best tips
for either new agents, or five best tips for new buyers, or five best tips for new sellers, or five best tips for just living your best life.
Five best tips for living your best life. I like that one. Mm-hmm. We're actually not a real estate tech startup education podcast anymore. I'm going to the beach. We're going to be doing it on the beach from now on. Toes.
You know what, dude?
In the water.
That's a brilliant idea.
You know, and we're just gonna be sitting there, and we're gonna give you the five tips.
Bring our equipment.
Yeah.
We're just gonna go to Cocoa Beach.
Yeah. We're just gonna
put our feet in the sand, and we're just gonna sit there. And if people look at us and like what they're doing, we're gonna be like, that's actually a great idea. It's because then people are gonna walk over and be like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
We're giving our best life.
Yeah.
Segment right now.
Five best tips for living life, you know?
Best life.
Best life. Sorry, best life. So. But yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows?
But we'll
come back
happen.
We like
nitpicking, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's always fun.
We're always, you know, looking for new ideas. So reading these articles are always pretty interesting to us. But again, you know, we want to thank everybody for coming back on a Friday. It is almost, I mean, before you know it, it's going to be holiday season.
Boy, Halloween's my favorite holiday.
I know, I did. We're going to be going crazy. Me and the wife are going to be heading to Salem, Salem, Massachusetts, for a little vacation in October to go check out their Halloween celebrations, because Halloween's a big... big fun time.
The witch town.
So, you know, if you have any questions, again, please reach out. If you have any concerns, you know, admin@homeuplink.com. We are actually going to start branching out in the near future. We've started to manipulate our site. Our site is running at full capacity now with all the open house listings that we're actually getting. So for the weekends, it's anywhere between, you know, thousands upon thousands of new open houses that are in, you know, the state of Florida. So please, if you do have time and you want to check out open houses, please come to the site, homeuplink.com. And also, we're going to be branching to the new build market as well. So if you are looking for new builds as well, we're going to be reaching out to all these new builders and, you know, getting some of their information on the site as well, so you can then start tracking and seeing where the new builds and open houses are in the great state of Florida. So at that, we want to appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, thanks for listening again on your Friday.
Oh, you got it.
Yeah, I got it that time. That was me.
You got it in.
That was me. Hope you have a good weekend. See ya on Monday.
See you on Monday.